questions raised last week. I've also requested Dr. Makalima to just give a summary of the report that was tabled by the then Minister of Finance in January-February of 2018 with regard to the municipal spending for the year that ended 2017. That was also circulated to you just to update you on that. To our colleagues from SAGA, welcome. Please introduce yourselves and you can go straight into the responses on the questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to members of the committee. My name is Bekumzi Charles Stofile. I am the National Executive Committee member of SALGA, responsible for IGR governance and councillor empowerment.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Khangwan Pet, a SALGA member. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Mohamed Lorgat. I'm an administrator from SALGA to provide technical assistance to my political office bearers. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. The first question, it deals with the district municipalities. It's a question that comes at the time in which we are in the discussions with the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, asking the department to reflect since 1998, the dawn of local government white paper. And that's there where we need to locate the discussions and the answer. And we then said and agreed that it is important that we need to re-look into the white paper on local government, because some of the issues that we are dealing with are systemic issues that comes from that period of establishment of local government in South Africa. And as a result of that, we agreed that it is important to relook on the role and function of the district municipalities in various areas. As we know, that the white paper in terms of its own outlook is the district municipality were mandated to deal with the coordination and support. And you know, support, it requires somebody that has a technical sound on various areas in supporting those municipalities that happen to be under a district municipality. And that is why we sponsored a debate and discussions with cooperative governance, and which in this case we have agreed to relook on that. And that is why there is some work pertaining to amendment of the Municipal Structures Act. On the issues of MSCOA, which the question was posed, our understanding, Chair, is that MSCOA, it's a product or system that has been introduced by the National Treasury. And from time to time, we have been engaging between ourselves and the National Treasury pertaining to the MSCOA. At one point, when this system was to be introduced, there was a back and forth discussions and engagement. And our view at that time was it is prudent that the MSCOA to be introduced on face basis. Because we understand that the sector of local government is complex. It doesn't mean one system can fit and everybody will be on par in terms of knowing and so on. And unfortunately, at that time, there could not be any sense of agreeing. And remember, it's not a SALGA matter, it's a National Treasurer's matter, including the training of practitioners that had to implement the MSCOA principles. It's a matter that National Treasury has been outsourced to a private entity to run training and so on and so forth. And that is what we understand pertaining to MSCOA. But having said so, as an association, that's its responsibility by the Constitution, is to lobby, advocate, and represent the interest of the local state. It has been always our interest to continue and engage pertaining to matters that have some hurdles in resolving challenges of performance and accountabilities in the areas where we operate as a local state. On the issues of MTEC, you'll know, Chair, MTEC is it's an instrument, it's as a result of agreements. We normally call it in the sector as a gentleman's agreement, for instance. It's not legalized. It's not found anywhere in any piece of law. It's a matter of arrangements that have been made. Having realized that and its weaknesses, as South African Local Government Association, we applaud to the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs to create this avenue and locate it in the law, and that is why in the recent past we are attempting to amend and insert the MPEC role into the Municipal Structures Act as proposed in the current deliberations between SALGA, COGTA, and all other role players pertaining to give teeth. In fact, in our view as an association is that we would wish that MPEC to be delinked from politics and account directly to council, and make its recommendations to council, not somewhere else, as the current practice today. And also have an ability to subpoena individuals that found not to be compliant with the regulations or the rules of the game. So basically, it's a work in progress, which fortunately between ourselves as South African Local Government Association and cooperative governance, we have agreed that we need to do and do some work on that. And that is why in the Standing Committee on Cooperative Governance on Tuesday, we made such a presentation together. Tuesday, this week, the past week. Today is Friday. Tuesday, we appeared before the COGTA pertaining to amendments on the Municipal Structures Act and other clarity that need to be clarified pertaining to certain matters of law. What is this one? Okay. I think there was a question, Chair, pertaining to spending in Free State. I think, Mohammed, maybe you can take that one with the Chair permission.
Thank you, Chair. I think there were some points made regarding the issue of the money that was returned for two consecutive years in the Free State specifically. So the point we wanted to make on this one specifically is that it's not a Free State specific issue alone. This is something that is actually transversal throughout the country. And the issue regarding underspending of conditional grants, which have to be returned to National Treasury, is something that's prevalent generally in many provinces, only the Free State itself. But one of the things I wanted to point out is that the capacity to spend is dependent on a number of factors, and the technical capacity or expertise being one of the most critically important of these factors. And also, in terms of the local government intergovernmental framework, the intergovernmental framework promotes collaboration between the different spheres of government. So between SALGA and COGTA, they're basically working together in an effort to try and address some of the issues of the technical expertise. And specifically, the organization or entity within COGTA is MISA, the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency. So the Minister of COGTA, who actually has the budget and the funding available, has recently deployed around 53 engineers for a period of 3 years to a number of municipalities to assist with the issue of technical capacity and expertise. And out of those, and we feel that this is an effort to be able to address that critically important issue of technical skills as well. So, as we think, in this specific issue here, there is work being done. It's done between SALGA and COGTA. And we feel that over and above those 53, there may be some further deployment of technical skills which will be sent. And it will have a big impact in terms of trying to address the issue. Because if those skills are not there, there's a difficulty in the municipalities being able to spend the infrastructure grants also. Okay, the next point that was raised, Chair, was the issue where there was some issue regarding interventions, which there was some you know inference made that there's been some court cases in the actual Free State province where the actual interventions could have led to findings and it was not done to audit findings and there was court cases, etc. And we were asked to respond. So when we went back and we tried to respond to this question, the point we want to raise is that the specifics regarding the court cases cannot be responded to because we don't have all necessary information. So we can't respond to something we don't really know about. It was just mentioned in passing that there were those things. We don't have the actual details, so we do not feel it's possible for us to respond to that. But what we wanted to just maybe mention at a higher level, from an intervention perspective, it needs to be made very, very clear. The SALGA does not initiate or drive any intervention in terms of the MFMA or the constitution. SALGA needs to be consulted and give inputs into any plan interventions. Those plan interventions are actually driven by the provincial government in the province itself. It's not SALGA that drives it. SALGA follows a model of lobbying, advocating to and for local government, and also supporting local government in areas where support is required. The other thing I wanted to specifically point out as well, Chair and members of the committee, is that in terms of Section 154, it's worth emphasizing the need and obligation that is placed on treasuries and COCTA to support municipalities first before going on the intervention route. And that's where we wanted to leave it at.
Yeah, I think National Treasurer have conducted a research on the intervention since the dawn of democracy and local government. And that research speaks itself about the weaknesses of the interventions and all other things on that chart. Yeah, Chair, on the support and training of councillors, SALGA have established a leadership institute in which this leadership institute, it provides various training and capacity building of councillors. For instance, you'll know that the local government, in the manner in which it operates, it have an executive authority in the form of executive mayor and the mayoral committee, which are portfolio-based. And in this training, we are training councillors on the basis of the portfolios that they hold, and so that we up their skill and capacity to respond to challenges and contribute towards reporting cycles that are in the municipality. Recently, as an association, we have entered into various agreements with the institutions of higher learning, VETS University, for instance, where we have agreed that we need to enroll counselors so that they can better equip themselves educationally and be able to respond to challenges of the time. And then we have been providing this training right through. And in the recent past couple of months, we have got a number of councillors that have been graduated through that intervention and agreement. Look, on this one, on the shutting down district municipalities, as I've said, located into 1998 white paper on local government and the current work that we are doing with COCTA. I believe out of that work and the discussions in the Minmec, it will then give clarity in terms of what needs to be done going into the future pertaining to local government, pertaining to district municipalities is concerned. I think, Chair, on the issue of MPEC, I've responded. I've said MPEC, it will be much more beneficial in our view if MPEC is handled in a more or less same way in which you are handling the SCOPA. Okay. And that is why earlier and I said de-establish and move away from the current practice that we have to account somewhere instead of accounting to council. Okay, I hope you understand what I meant by that. And therefore account in terms of what you picked up in your issues. Okay, you take this one.
On the question regarding what does SALGA suggest on the shortage of revenue and low base in municipalities, this was with regards to the issue of the funding for local government. So SALGA is currently undertaking research in this regard. We've already commenced with the research with regards to the whole issue of the funding envelope for local government, specific regard to local government equitable share. And that research is expected to be finalized by the end of March 2019. And then we'll be able to respond more appropriately after that. So we just wanted to let the committee know that that's where we are. And once that's done, we will then be able to respond more appropriately in that matter. Then the next one regarding the issue of the unfunded budget. This is a difficult matter, obviously. But what we wanted to maybe to explain is that the reason for this is quite varied and very complex. And there are a number of contributing factors why municipalities would pass unfunded budgets. So as an overriding statement, there should be no municipalities passing unfunded budgets. So that's one thing that SALGA makes very clear, that budgets needs to be passed, has to be funded. There needs to be money available, in terms of what you need to actually do. But what we have picked up when we've engaged municipalities is that there's a number of other things that do impact them. So the one issue that we've picked up is the issue of unfunded mandates. So municipalities are then sometimes burdened with certain things which they hadn't planned to do, but unfortunately it becomes like a de facto requirement that they must do it. So once it happened in 1 year, in future years, they are expected to be able to do that again.
Just for record purposes, can you list those unfunded mandates that we captured?
Chair, I don't have the full list of it out of offhand, but we'll be able to send it through to you. We do have a list of those things. So that's the one. The other issue that needs to be also mentioned is that obviously when it comes to the issue, and we've picked this up quite a bit in some of the district municipalities, is that there is an issue of staff or organogram considerations that needs to be taken into account. So in some cases where municipalities' funding has been reduced or curtailed and they're still maintaining the same organogram and structure, unless they're going to cut staff numbers and cut the staff bill, there's no way they're going to be able to balance the budget. So hence we're saying that in some cases they pass the unfunded budget, realizing that there may be a process that needs to take place over a number of, or in a period of time, which will require them to reduce the numbers, and only once that is done can they be able to balance the budget. So there are a number of considerations that give rise or contribute to the issue of the unfunded budget. But as an overriding point, as you mentioned, that from a SALGA perspective, the point is there should not be unfunded budgets passed. All budgets should be funded, and as far as possible, the municipality should be able to balance their budgets.
And that is why, Chair, in the MINMEC, part of the discussions that we had on Friday last week in the MINMEC is the role of COGTA in terms of its role is to coordinate. Okay. Now, when municipalities engage in the IDP, you need that coordination of various sector departments to participate. Exactly. Okay, that is the issue. Now, in the process, you'll take, for instance, a Category 3 municipality, which has no mandate whatsoever of dealing with human settlement. Okay. But over a period of time, after you've passed the budget and IDP, you are expected to do housing, which is not your mandate. Okay. So I'm saying, Chair, the Mohammed says we don't have it. It's a list of unfunded mandates that are pushed to municipality, which we call it in the sector as a fiscal stamping. When it comes to the issue of VPS, Chair, the instruments in the Republic of South Africa, it should be a vibrant instrument. It should be instruments that immediately picked up issues. The question that we are asking in SALGA is, how on earth did we allow this to happen and we only pick it up years later? Whereas you have Auditor General that is performing audit, whereas you have National Treasurer that is receiving Section 71, 72 reports, and so on and so forth. This to us is an indictment because it's a matter that we picked up very late, whereas your instruments are there, supposed to be responsive, it's supposed to pick it up immediately, and it's supposed to raise it up. And that is why we are saying, as SALGA, unfortunately, in the period under review, nowhere where SALGA does receive a Section 71 or 72 report. These reports goes to National Treasurer, and we pick this report after their assessment and report back about the challenges. And every year or every financial year, there's an audit conducted by Auditor General. And we are then saying, as an association, it is then important to up the game on our instruments of monitoring and accountability. We need to up the game pertaining to check and balances that we have created for ourselves so that we don't bump into a similar problem of this nature. And what we have been discouraging our councillors and municipalities as members to SALGA is that whatever that they do, they must do it within the prescript of law as prescribed by a law to the latter. And that is what we have been encouraging municipalities to do throughout the country. Unfortunately, on the issue of VPS, I think all of us, we must accept that instruments that we have put together, maybe they were at the lab.
Regarding the turnaround strategy to enhance local government investment and to avoid collapse in the local government. So from a SALGA perspective, we've recently established in this financial year a trade and investment working group, which is focusing on investment strategies for local government broadly, but also on specific municipalities in specific regions. And one of the things they're looking at over there is how can they leverage of their sort of natural resources or natural advantages that they may have, so on the coastal areas in terms of tourism, etc., and other things as well. The other thing I wanted to maybe mention in terms of this, that just on a broader level, local government, the fiscal architecture is in need of an overhaul, or it will definitely lead to a collapse in local government if it stays the same as it currently does. That's what I wanted to leave it at.
You're done? Yeah, I followed all the questions. Thank you, Councillor Sofila and your team. We acknowledge honourable members, the presence of Honourable Motara from Gauteng, Honourable Simandi from KZN, where the sun rises, and Honourable Esa. Welcome at this meeting. Honourable members, there you have it, the reply. The fact of the matter is, this is the input by SALGA on the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. That is the input, as the FFC made their inputs, etc. Are there any follow-up questions? Things that you need clarity, more clarity on? I recognize Honorable Isaac and I recognize Honorable Ter Blanche. Chairperson, thank you so much for the opportunity, and my sincere apologies that I'm a little late. The truth of the matter is the traffic just murdered me. But point taken, Chairperson. Thank you, you're so right. Chairperson, yes, as you will recall, we did have an opportunity to engage with the gentleman from Salga last week, and I think he did his best, being a one-man show, so we're very grateful for all the efforts that was put in last week. Chairperson, I don't want to go over everything that we talked about last week for the sake of time, but I just wanted to highlight the two issues, and unfortunately I must. On page 11 of the presentation, that was received last week, we did discuss the issue of unfunded budgets that are continuously year on year in past. Erased it, sure. Right, okay, good. But it is a matter of concern because for the last 3-4 years, you would respect, Chairperson, that every year...
Yes, sir, that matter was answered, and I'm requesting, just for the sake of the minutes, that your replies come in a written format.
Okay.
And that will be also circulated to our members to make it mark.
All right, fine. Then we'll accept that for now. Then the issue of VBS, which was raised now. The issue of VBS, I must highlight and ask this. Was Salga never aware of what has been transpiring at the municipalities in terms of VBS? Were there never discussions in the last 12 months highlighting certain municipalities' connections and relationship with VBS? And now to come and explain to the committee and say, well, we should be more vigilant and we should actually take cognizance and the law should be followed, etc., is acceptable. Yes, the law has always been in place, the PFMA has always been in place. But was there any discussions regarding VBS, or did anybody at Salga have any exposure to the issues that have been transpiring regarding VBS with certain municipalities? Thank you, Chairperson. I trust my question at this point in time is apt. Thank you.
The institution that monitors the bank is a reserve bank. And I take you back to 2016, Honourable Members, when we dealt with this financial sector regulation. Well, there is captured what is supposed to happen. This matter is in depth being dealt with by SCOPA and the Standing Committee on Finance in the National Assembly, because I'm following it. So all those documentation, maybe we can get that report from the Standing Committee and from SCOPA to be circulated to our members to bring us on board on the latest situation regarding this matter, which is a very, very serious matter. Honourable de Blanche.
Chairperson, thank you. Okay, I think let's start by thanking Salga for appearing here today. We really appreciate that. I would have expected that somebody that didn't turn up the previous time would offer some apology for not attending the previous time. And I'm still waiting for that. But I mean, that is not in my field of responsibility, but I need to raise it anyway. Chairperson, yes, there was an attempt made to answer our questions. And sorry, I don't think I'm very much clearer than I used to be last Friday. And I will, obviously wait then for the written responses that we're going to get, and hopefully then we'll be more clear on the issues that were raised. Chairperson, I know what broadly the responsibility of Salga is. They are a representative body, oversight responsibilities and stuff like that. But Chairperson, one of the major issues in this country at the moment regarding good governance and for this country to succeed
is the fact that local government, you know, must start performing their role. And we know, Chairperson, that that is not exactly the case at the moment. You know, at the moment, there is sort of an implosion regarding local government. And I'm just wondering, in terms of, I already touched on the responsibility of SALGA, I read that, but what are they doing about it? Are they aware? And what do they see as their role to get the third sphere of government performing? That is just something that I want to know. In the presentation that we got now, or in the answers that we got, it was also mentioned that SALGA feels, that is what we got here, that they need to up their game. Yes, I certainly agree. And if they can maybe just be more clear on exactly what they see as upping their game, because I am not sure what they mean by that, and we share the same sentiment anyway. So I would really be glad if they can just, you know, come more into the clear and tell us exactly what they mean by upping their game. Chairperson, then lastly, I also heard the gentleman said that they, and I didn't get it clearly, that they are working, if I heard correctly, on an investment strategy. Is that what I heard? And if that's the case, I also need some more clarity on that, Chairperson. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, honourable members. Order. He was nearly on time, honourable Mr. Shipping. Order, members. The up of the game is monitoring, evaluation, and control, and it stretches over all departments in the three spheres of government. No. Go. I'm taking you back to the report of the Select Committee for Finance on the revised fiscal framework in terms of our recommendations. It's a governance issue in all three spheres of government, not only local government. And you can read with that the report of the Auditor General. I'm just giving you the bigger picture. What are we dealing with? On the issue of the apology, there was a written apology that was submitted, but we requested the leadership to be present, and they are present this morning, so thank you. Over to you, sir. There were two questions. Your team.
No, thanks, Chair. Just to come in also with regard to the already presentation and the answering of question from my colleague. But specifically, I need to come in with regard to upping the game, with regard to dealing with these matters that are affecting our municipalities. With regard to the challenges on the audit, that are mostly negative year in, year out. When we respond to say that in terms of continuous capacity building that we had been doing for so many years, and then today we are saying that they were going to up the game, we might have realized that in so many years, when we talk about capacity building, Chairperson, we used to refer to maybe a one-day workshop where we call in our councillors to say, let's go to a workshop. But today, as the chair of our governance said, when we say we up the game is that we are serious about the issues of skills and capacity building of our councillors, because we have identified credible institutions where we took our councillors to be trained on a yearly basis, so that they become more knowledgeable with regard to instruments of monitoring and evaluations. He has been talking about the Vets University, the National School of Government, and many other institutions with regard to provinces in the entire country. In that regard, if we compare it with so many years in the past, where we used to call councillors for one day and say, please, we want to train you on financial management or maybe on oversight. It was not enough. But as an organized local government institution, we said, no, let's try to do something better. And we believe now we are going to do something better with regard to those particular issues.
Yeah, the other thing, I think, honourable members, they are living in South Africa and they have been members of parliament. It's important to reflect to the South African history, and it is important to reflect in the recent past local government elections in 2016. It would be incorrect to believe that SALGA is not doing anything, because as we were moving towards local government 2016, we have seen in the results of Auditor General better audit outcomes because of the investment that South African Local Government Association have been engaged on. And seated here in this room, you know, after 2016, the turnover on new councillors coming in, and that reflects on your better audit outcome. And that speaks on the skills and capacity that have been brought in the sector. And that is important that members must recognize that. On the issue of the VPS, the question is, have we discussed? Look, SALGA derives its existence from the Constitution of the Republic, which is the supreme law of the land, and its constitution, which defines itself as an organization that its responsibility is to lobby, advocate, and represent. Now, what do you do when you lobby? You lobby better instruments to better the sector. Like the example that I was making earlier on, that 1998 we have adopted a white paper on local government, but the white paper developments have surpassed the white paper and the challenges that we face today. And SALGA has been lobbying that it needs to be relooked at, the local government framework in the Republic. I think the chair has answered on the issue of apology. So on the issue of VPS, at no point, as far as I remember, as a serving NEC member of SALGA, having discussions of this nature in the NEC, because there was no point that was brought to our attention. We were all also surprised when we picked up on the newspaper, and we then begin to do some work in terms of what could be our response going into the future. And that is why we are saying part of upping the game as we deliberate with the MINMEC is how do we then make sure that we catch these things before it happens. I think to me, Chair, that is what we understand.
Thank you, Honourable Stofile. Honourable members, I turn your attention to page 39 of the MTBBS document. There's a whole page addressing the growing financial crisis in municipalities. And that is actually telling us what we have to monitor in terms of our committee work. 2.5 billion rand per annum is being allocated to build capacity in municipalities. We have to zoom into that. Where's the money going to? It's very clear, upping the game, to get the game up, is to improve intergovernmental relations. MSCOA is a exercise not only from the National Treasury, it involves other departments as well. The whole matter of impact, yes, get it on the level of SCOPA. That is the SCOPA at the municipal level. The same principle apply. The same principle. And where we are deployed as members of parliament, we must go and see that impact is working. And get the information and support. And support our councillors in the municipality. Section 154 of the Constitution tells us national and provincial departments must do their best to support municipalities But you can only support the municipality if you've got the capacity to do it at the provincial, at the national level. Referring to revenue collection, I turn you to the business day of today, where the Honourable Minister for Cooperative Governance will table a plan regarding that specific on the payments to ESCOM. That plan will still go to Cabinet. So thank you very much to SAGA for your inputs today, and we look forward to the responses you gave in a written format to the Secretariat. We will release you now as we are going to the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, the negotiating mandates from provinces. When you travel safely, please. You've got loved ones at home as well. All of us. Treasury, thank you. Stephen and Mrs. Swanu, Mr. Stephen Canyon, for being here this morning, and also the assistance from the National Treasury during the briefings in the provinces. Honourable members, that brings us to the point consideration of the negotiating mandates. Yes, you're welcome, sir. You can have coffee, tea outside and something to eat. Then it's not wasteful expenditure. We go straight to the negotiating mandates. Are there anyone else not here? Gauteng, did it arrive? Sorry.
Chair, the portfolio committee is only meeting at 10 in the legislature, so we can proceed without. Thanks.
That's fine. Honourable members, let's go immediate to the negotiating mandates. Eastern Cape's representative, Honourable Geiler, is not present. I'll ask Honourable Motla Shuping to deal with the Eastern Cape. The Eastern Cape's mandate. You've got the package?
Yes. The Eastern Cape supports, Chair.
Eastern Cape supports. Here's my list. Watch my legs. Free State. There's no representative from the Free State. Honorable Motara will handle Free State for us.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, according to the mandate, they vote or negotiate in favor.
Free State, thank you, Free State. Gauteng, we're waiting for. KZN, Honourable Zamandi.
For some logistical reasons, I think somebody must just confirm that. But I was in a meeting and I know that it was just a matter of a signature to attach agreement. If you receive, then I'm fine. And of course, Chair, just a remark to make.
Please.
The portfolio committee was quite happy on the fact that you remember that we put treasurer on the spot about the disaster funds. That storm damage in Durban and things, we see that in this adjustment we've received 109 million towards that, and obviously that's the impact of when two legislatures are collaborating and working together in seeking solutions. So they really appreciate you for that, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Samandi. Treasury received the mandates plus the minutes, etc., so they will respond to that. Limpopo is not here. Honourable Motara, can you deal with Limpopo?
Yes, thanks, Chair. Limpopo negotiates in favour.
Limpopo negotiates in favour. Malanga, Honourable Isaac.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mpumalanga just raised a concern regarding the huge amount of money that was unnecessarily spent on the pipeline, water, reticulation network in Bushbuck Reach Municipality, And obviously, it is a huge matter of concern in that you've got hundreds of thousands of people that are still struggling without water there, and of course that the allocation did not address anything as regards the Bushbuck Ridge reticulation network in terms of water. Furthermore, they negotiated in favor of the mandate. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Essak. We come to Northern Cape. The Northern Cape legislature votes in favor of the bill, Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, and supports it. But there are also minutes and issues raised on page 2 of the minutes, but Treasury will reply to that. We get to Northwest, Honorable Motla Shuping, a lengthy document.
No, it should be lengthy. And for one specific reason, if you are a national government and you come in with an intervention, the intervention should be meant to address certain shortcomings that are observed. And it is on the basis, because this is allocation of funds to deliver services that they said were not delivered. And don't be surprised about the lengthy document. It's very substantive and qualitative. But there are three major issues that needs to be addressed. You know, this issue of Mpumalanga coal knowledge that it has been getting, and you said it was an intervention as a result of load shedding, electricity problem in the country. And all. If it's an intervention, it will never be a continuous intervention since that time to date, and they are still benefiting. And the Northwest is still saying we are the largest cement producers in the country, and we're not getting the limestone haulage. And this must be looked into very seriously, because it impacts on our roads. Our roads are very bad. A national treasury must make that intervention. With regard to the roads, you would recall that no community now. You know, people burn schools when they want a road, and it's very common in the Northwest Province. Now, the fact of the matter is, you're talking the road maintenance grant as opposed to the upgrading. Now, if you maintain a gravel road, it means you pour soil and all that, and can be washed away again. It's a repetitive and an unnecessary exercise. If that matter could be taken and looked into, that you change the prescription from maintenance to upgrading. Now, with regard to the Morendile local municipality, it is the matter that was raised in the public hearing very sharply about that community, that there's a shortage of water. And we have, and gladly so, we appreciate the diversion from the indirect to the direct grant of the municipalities that we have for the first time given a lot of money for water backlog, shortage, and all that. Now, here is a municipality just in the surrounding areas from where you located funds, and it's causing a serious problem because they've got a serious water shortage. And we are sitting on a time bomb. If we don't address it, people may come with very serious excuses as we go towards the election. Over and above all these concerns, Honorable Chairperson, the Northwest Province unanimously supports the bill. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Motla Shuping. I want to congratulate Northwest. They had 4 public hearings,
yes.
And I heard it over the radio while I was driving. The whole of Tuesday, I heard this, as well as Wednesday morning. Yes, so congratulations for that. The matter raised by the Honorable Motla Shuping, the first matter, referring to Mpumalanga, was also raised in March when we dealt with the Division of Revenue Bill. So this thing is escalating. Western Cape?
Chairperson, thank you.
Let's go.
So Western Cape,
I'm going to get to the documentation now that we received. What they raised, Chairperson, is their concern about the wage increase that they need to find the money from their own allocation and the possible implications on service delivery in the Western Cape. But getting to the documentation, Chairperson, that we received, and I'm going to read from here, Budget Committee reports that it confers on the Western Cape's permanent delegate in the NCOP the authority to support the bill. So they are supporting the bill, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you to Honourable de Blance, representing the Western Cape. Honourable members, we will now give Treasury the opportunity to make their input. Yes.
Before National Treasury, I just wanted to say, and if you look at the negotiating document of the Northwest Province and what Honourable Mr. Shubing has said, and I respect what he has said, but I think the solution to the Northwest Province is that it should just be handed to the Democratic Alliance to bring some other
thing. Oh, Honourable Esan, you have to
probably
order.
Help to bring it back on track. This is costing, costing this country billions.
That province held four public hearings, and those hearings report are captured, yes. So you are out of order.
No, Chair, if he wants to participate in how provinces were demarcated, he must be in the board of the demarcation board so that he must make his input there.
All right, we're not going
it
there.
It's not for auction to the DA. They must contest elections.
Order. I hope, I can see you are excited. It's Friday. So we won't keep you too long here. Treasury, thank you for your presence. I'm giving over to you that you can reply to the negotiating mandates and the comments. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. We'll try our best to answer all the questions. I'll take the first round and Stephen will take those that I unfortunately missed. We tried to do it also in order of, so we'll start with the Eastern Cape. With regard to the Eastern Cape,
Sorry to interrupt you. I know you might have received it now. So you can also reply in writing.
No, we'll do both.
Yes, thank you.
No, we'll do both. With regard to the Eastern Cape, indicated the appreciation for the addition to the in-year school infrastructure backlogs grant, and just to raise a concern about the ability of the National Department to spend. And that is actually, in the past, it was a very valid concern. The reason why there's an in-year injection is actually because the National Department of Basic Education has actually built up the capacity to spend. So all the money that's made available is already linked to dedicated projects, and that it's already underway or will be shortly underway. So this is actually very good news that they've built their capacity. So if we'd kept the allocation as is, they would have overspent on their budget and they would have had to slow down on the rollout. Then with regard to the request for the disaster, the Western Cape one, Stephen, I'm going to ask you to do that one. He's done all the hard work on all the disasters, so he's the residing expert. Then with regard to the Free State, and quite a bit of concern is raised that there's no additional top-up with regard to the wage bill. And this is not just a concern that's just raised by the Free State. It was also raised by the Standing Committee on Appropriation when the bill was discussed. What is quite important here is that we need to acknowledge that we sit in a financially constrained environment. And when we were a land of plenty, we always budgeted for personnel increases plus CPI. And if it went over CPI, we had the sufficient flexibility in the budget to accommodate that. We haven't been able to do that now for a number of years. So we originally, when the economy started slowing down, we did still inject some of the money required, but not the full amount. But for the last few years, and we've made it very clear that in order to remain within our budget ceiling, something needs to give. There's only two ways that you can actually deal with a personnel bill. You can either limit the increases that go through, or you limit the number of staff. But you can't increase the number of staff and increase salaries above inflation and then keep within the ceiling. So when we also looked at the data, there's been quite a large growth in personnel numbers, and what is needed is that those growth numbers need to be curtailed. But also quite importantly, that it be curtailed in the right areas, because the last thing you want is for key staff linked to service delivery to actually be the ones that go, and the ones that attached to administrative work, that they are the ones that remain in the system. So that is quite key. There is still scope for the right balance to ensure that the government service that we have are appropriately geared to actually do service delivery. And if you look at some of the appointments that made, often priorities given to administrative staff and then neglected areas are those with regard to key staff. And that is one of the reasons why in here there's adjustments by the National Department of Health to actually facilitate the appointment of key critical health staff in here, and that money is then continued over the MTF. So that is where the key focus needs to lie. It's not just linked to provinces. National government exactly is going through the same exercise. Of course, local government falls outside the system because they're not subject to the same negotiation process. So really what is quite key going forward is to right-sizing government. And that just should be the key focus. Then with regard to, again, it's still a free state, conditional grants to failing municipalities with province. however, there's not the grant anymore. It links actually to a request that came through as part of last year's budget process, and we announced that, that there will be a special grant made available for municipalities that acknowledge that they're in financial difficulties and are then willing and able to turn themselves around. In our interactions on the ground, it became quite clear what is quite key first is to ensure that the provinces and the national department responsible to oversee municipalities actually have that capacity. And one of the key concerns that came out is that provinces in particular, but also national government, are not sufficiently geared to actually do the support interventions and the interventions when municipalities fail. So the money is accordingly being redirected, so it's still for the same purpose, it's just being done in a different way. And so let's first build the capacity of provinces and national government to support and intervene in municipalities so that those interventions, when they're undertaken, are actually successful. Some of the money is also going towards to National Treasury for the Financial Recovery Service, and it's also going to provinces to build their capacity. So what is quite key and what the committee should actually focus on is whether those money that's made available is actually resulting in better interventions in the municipalities concerned. Then with regard to Mpumalanga, the question is raised about the capacity to monitor the grants. What is quite key, the responsibility to build the monitoring capacity lies with the department that's actually responsible for implementing and administrating the grant. And the reporting conditions and monitoring responsibilities are given to the respective departments in terms of Section 9 and 10 of the Division of Revenue Act. And the accounting officers should ensure that they do build the requisite capacity within the departments to do so. And if they don't, then they should come in front of these committees and account why they're not actually doing it. Exactly. Then with regard to Limpopo, there's a whole stack new. The first one is to appreciate the allocations that's made available for the Limpopo Academic Hospital. And then concerns are raised about the quality of hospitals, of other hospitals in the province. And what would be quite key is that we will elevate this matter to the National Department of Health for them to follow up with the provincial departments of health why you know, these hospitals are lagging behind and are not really meeting the required standards. Also, Parliament has got a role to play here in their oversight responsibilities. And then also the accountant or auditor general has also got responsibilities in terms of looking at whether the money is being correctly spent with regard to the issue raised in 5.2 that deals with allocations to the Nandoni Dam that are not explained or accounted for properly. Then with regard to the public transport network grant, the issue was raised about, you know, currently there's concerns about how the subsidies are allocated between the different transport modalities. And the responsibility for doing that policy work is that of the National Department of Transport. And to be quite honest with the committee, the work is not really going there that at the speed it's required to go. We will refer the matter to them and highlight the issue, but it could also be quite useful for the committee to ask the department why the work is not really going very fast. It's actually quite problematic for us because it also links up with another issue raised about how do you deal with strategic roads and how do you actually fund that as well. With regard to the coal haulage one, we can give the... it was a short-term specific intervention when we had electricity shortages and it was then critical to upgrade the road. What is quite key, that special allocation will fall away from, I think next year would be the last year they will receive it, and then it will fall away. But at the same time, it will be quite useful then to actually have a broader policy on how these roads, and it's not just coal haulage, but all strategic roads are dealt with. But the policy is not yet in place. Then with regard to the maintenance of school infrastructure remains a challenge in the province, and the committee deemed it necessary that funding should be ring-fenced for this function. And I would just like to refer the committee, and it's fortunate because there's a change to the disaster in that framework that's also included in the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. I would like to refer the committee to page 38 of the framework that deals with the education infrastructure grant. And it's one, two, three, the fourth black bullet says provincial education departments should allocate no less than 20% of the education infrastructure grant allocation to address preventative and corrective maintenance at schools. And the next one says, included in the baseline for 2018 MTF is an amount of 1.5 billion earmarked for maintenance of schools, 300 million in 2018-19, 350 million in 2019-20, and 800 million in 2020-21. So the issue of maintenance is definitely dealt with in the conditional grant framework, and the earmarking referred to is definitely there. So what is quite important is that, of course, that the provinces then ensure that they adhere to that requirement that maintenance are actually done. Then there's two recommendations made about water and the importance of water quality and also the importance of educating communities on water. These are all issues that gets dealt with by the National Department of Water and Sanitation, and they've also got regional offices in the nine provinces and responsible for doing that. Then incapacity to spend funds in municipalities, and that there's the importance to build the capacity. It links up also with another question that dealt with how are we going to deal with the interventions now that the municipal rehabilitation grant is not going to be in place. And it links up to this question as well. It's very important that we build the capacity of provinces first and also national government department to support and oversee municipalities. Then the last issue also raised is the Department of Social Development should assist on how to absorb social workers into their system to ensure that the issue of substance abuse and other related matters in communities are dealt with. Maybe just to highlight to the committee, again, I can refer to page 36 this time of the medium-term budget policy statement where it is also discussed. It basically highlights the fact that there was a specific short-term intervention due to a concern that provinces are not employing sufficient social workers. So a grant was put in place for 3 years, referred to as the Social Worker Employment Grant, and it was in place since 2017-18, and it's next year is going to be incorporated into the provincial equitable share. But 632 social workers were appointed through this grant, and provinces will then be required to continue with their employment. But that, given that we've now got some of the numbers we were looking for, the need for the grant is not there anymore. But it's a very important that this intervention be acknowledged, and also that it had the desired outcome that we were looking for. Then with regard to Northern Cape, the committee raised the concern that government is introducing new conditional grants. And we always need to balance two considerations. The one consideration is that if you introduce too many grants in the system, if you overload the reporting responsibilities on provinces and also, of course, municipalities on the grants that's introduced. So if it's a function that's effectively and efficiently performed by a province or municipality, particularly more provinces, because given that their provincial equitable share makes up 80% of their total funding pool, it is important that if they've got the capacity to keep it in the provincial equitable share. In cases where they do not do the right thing, or when it's a critical national priority, and it's in those instances we introduce a conditional grant. So, for example, the two conditional grants that were introduced for health, for specific short-term interventions such as HR capacitation and also for beds and linen, it was done specifically to enable health reforms that were not taking place in provinces. So to achieve certain national priorities is another consideration. So we need to balance those two priorities against each other to ensure that we do achieve as government the objectives that we put forward. But fortunately, as we also introduced new conditional grants, as grants have performed their purposes, they can also be abolished and then incorporated back into the equitable share. So what you'll see is that to make the system responsive, you will see some new conditional grants being introduced, but at the same time, other conditional grants also being incorporated into the provincial equitable share. So it's not just that new grants are introduced and the number gets more and more and more. The numbers sometimes even become less because we incorporate more grants into the provincial equitable share, for example, than what we introduce, for example, new grants. But the area that's specifically, I would say, quite volatile at this stage and is quite open to new conditional grants being introduced or subcomponents within new conditional grants being introduced is in the health sector. And there's a very specific reason for that as well. There's pilots underway for national health insurance, and as they learn through those lessons, they adapt and change and improve. So you'll see that some of the subcomponents disappear, new subcomponents are introduced, and it's all to actually support and facilitate better health provision. So it's particularly in the health sector that you see quite a bit of changes. The other sectors are quite stable, actually. Then with regard to Northern Cape, concern was that one. The other one was that we may need to ensure that the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill should comply with the requirements of the PFMA, and we can give the committee the assurance that definitely it does nothing else but comply with Section 32 of the PFMA. And then the last one about the time frames for provincial legislatures, that is not within our scope to do. Yes, exactly. And then did I go through everything? Yeah. Yeah. Then the Northwest, this is... Sometimes we need to give answers. It's not necessarily going to be make everyone happy, but what is quite important is to indicate also sometimes the reasons why certain decisions have been made. The issues raised by Northwest about the issues was the provincial road maintenance grant, just focusing on maintenance, and it does not allow for road upgrading. And there's a very specific reason for that. Firstly, the provincial road maintenance grant is what we call a supplementary grant. What a supplementary grant is it only funds part of the expenditure. The provincial equitable share is meant to fund the rest. So the provincial road maintenance grant does not fund all roads. It just funds what is seen as strategic roads within that province. And what provinces often like doing is rather build new roads than actually focusing on the roads that's really got the traffic and really is actually supporting economic growth and development by ensuring that those roads are efficient and effective, i.e., you know, you can drive with it without having troubles of potholes and the like. So those are the roads that's been identified through the provincial road maintenance grant. And it specifically disallows certain things. So if a province wants to build a new road that's not a strategic road, they can still do it. They can do it through their provincial equitable share. But it also does not allow for roads that's currently gravel to be upgraded for tar, for example, and it makes it very specific in the conditional grant framework that, you know, that must be funded through the provincial equitable share. So the road is very specific, and it's not supposed to be broader than that. It's really targeting very specific roads. And what is quite important, the reason why these roads are targeted and the reason why it's included in a conditional grant is the reason that it's a national priority, and those are the areas that should be focused on. And then the Moretele local municipality, it's again on water services. Stephen, can I ask you to deal with that one?
Okay. Just to respond then on the two disaster-related ones. First, in the Eastern Cape, there was a query as to why recovery from fires was funded in the Western Cape but not the Eastern Cape. The disaster recovery funds are only allocated, if there's an application for the funds, and if the NDMC's assessment is that the province can't cope within its own resources. So you'll see that even in the Western Cape, the fire relief funding is quite small relative to the scale of the fire because so much of what was damaged was privately owned, and so that's the responsibility of the private owners or their insurers. To deal with. So we never received an application from the Eastern Cape for that relief funding. And then in the case of the Moretele, the query from the Northwest was why that municipality didn't receive an allocation from the Water Services Infrastructure Grant in this amendment bill. And I should just emphasize that in this bill we provide 3 billion rands in drought relief funding. That is additional to the normal baseline for the regular expansion of water and sanitation services that's funded through a range of other grants. And so we didn't receive an application for drought relief funding from Moretele Municipality, but they do receive in 2018-19 through the normal grant system, they receive 112 million rand for the MIG. They received 60 million rand for the Water Services Infrastructure Grant, and they receive 18 million rand through the Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant. So it's not that the system doesn't take account of the needs for the delivery of water and sanitation services in that area. Thank you, Chair.
You done? Thank you. Thank you to Treasury. Mrs. Fano, Mr. Canyon, all the members, during the at the presentation, the briefing on the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, the matter was raised, and you'll find it on page 25 of the MTPBS. The whole matter of the 30.2 billion rand shortfall regarding the wage bill. Of the 30.2 billion rand shortfall across national and provincial government departments, the largest gaps are in defense, the police, provincial health, and provincial education. And so it goes on. So this is a matter that's going to affect provinces. And I requested that evening Advocate Jenkins, I sensitized him regarding this matter, and we acknowledge the presence of Advocate Jenkins. Thank you, Advocate, for being here, present in the meeting. And here's a legal opinion being circulated. Members received it? You received it. Advocate Jenkins, I'm going to give you the opportunity just to take us through your paper.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Good morning, honorable members. Chair, I must start this by just saying that I prepared this document in a rather quick space of time with a very defective brief. I know I spoke to you over the phone. You gave me actually a better brief over the phone, but somehow that brief over the phone lapsed in my head when I got the request from the Standing Committee on Appropriations. And as one can see in the opinion, I don't actually analyze Section 35 of the Public Finance Management Act. So I dealt with it in the committee. I made a presentation in the committee, and then I included that. So I'd like to do that here as well. So I'm going to take you through the opinion, but then refer to Section 35 and how I see it, and it will be the same as what I said to the Standing Committee. Chairperson, when I look at the, first of all, what I do is I try to analyze this public service wage agreement. Where does it fit in? And that's what I mean. I didn't refer to 35 when I do it in the opinion, but it is really an agreement between various trade unions under the Public Service Bargaining Council, Central Bargaining Council, and it affects both national and provincial. So that in itself then ended up in the MTBPS, and as such, the way I look at it, it's a policy matter. It's a matter where we've made an agreement and we said, okay, we have now to find a solution how to stick with our agreement. When I look at Section 35 of the Public Finance Management Act, it wants to deal specifically with unfunded mandates. And it says if you have an unfunded mandate, or if you're giving if national assigns an additional function or power or imposes any other obligation on a provincial government, it must be set out in a memorandum that must be introduced in Parliament in that legislation. Now, failing to put it in that memorandum would, of course, raise certain questions about why is there non-compliance of Section 35 on the one hand, what's the effect of the non-compliance, and so on. So, Chair, that is an issue if it falls under 35, but for the following reasons, I don't think it falls under Section 35. When we unpack Section 35, and we have to interpret it within the context of the PFMA, which is we want accountability, we want proper financial management, we want proper planning, we want transparency. So and we can see why Section 35 can speak to those issues, both accountability and transparency, because we must put it in a memo. This transparency goes to Parliament, which means there's accountability for that. So Parliament can then ask the Minister, how are we going to deal with this at a provincial level? And that's, Chair, this is the crux of my opinion. It applies to an additional function or power or imposes any other obligation on province or government. And it must be assigned in national draft national legislation. So there's an argument that says the non-funding of the wage agreement is not imposition in national legislation. I differ from that. First of all, I say it's not being imposed in national legislation in the way Section 35 is envisaging it. Section 35 is envisaging national government saying to provinces, you have to establish something that's going to cost you money. You have to fulfill a function that's going to cost you money. And the Division of Revenue Bill is not doing that. It's not saying to provinces, fund the wage bill at provincial level because we say so at national government. It's not saying that. The reason why we need to deal with the wage bill is because there was collective bargaining. It's not imposed by national through legislation on provinces. Now, that might not dismiss the matter or satisfy everyone, so I'm going to go further like I did in the Standing Committee and say when we interpret legislation, we must understand that legislation is supposed to be clear. It's a sharp tool to distinguish what is right and wrong or what is appropriate, what is inappropriate. But yes, there is scope for interpretation. And the courts have said that when you interpret legislation, we do it in a certain way. We do it within the context, like I've said, and trying to give effect to the purpose of that legislation. And then when we're looking at 35, it really starts, and we must take this seriously, for lack of a better word. It says when you assign an additional function or power or imposes any other obligation. We cannot just look at imposes any other obligation, because that is some of the arguments I've heard in the Standing Committee, that the non-funding of the wage agreement imposes an obligation. But, Chair, we can't ignore the fact that we are dealing in 35 with additional functions or powers or imposes any other obligation. That last phrase, any other obligation, must be interpreted in the context of national legislation imposing an additional function or power. So maybe there's something other than additional functions or powers, and that is where the catchphrase at the end will come in, or any other obligation. So yes, there's an obligation on provinces, same as there is on national, to pay wages for their officials that work for government, including myself. And my Treasury colleagues, I see they sound also very happy. I don't know how it affects us. By the way, we in Parliament, maybe Treasury will benefit. Parliament is not part of the public sector negotiations. So I should actually rephrase it. Treasury should be very happy about that. So it's not opposing, the National is not coming in opposing that additional obligation. The obligation results from the collective bargaining. So in my view, Chair, when we interpret 35, I'm clear on it that Section 35 does not find application in this regard. And I want to say as well, which I said, and I don't know if I was it was given effect to that, but I also think that the issue of the wage negotiations or the wage deal is a very important issue. It's been raised that in answers from National Treasury as well, that we have to right-size government. We have inflation in the country, so we must have wage agreements. And it has a huge financial impact simply because the wage bill and the number of people working for government is rather large, as in any developmental state. Of course, the issue is productivity. But let me not go there, but as I'm talking, I'm trying to also say to myself, this is really a policy matter. That's why it's in the MTBPS, in the medium-term budget policy statement. So when it comes to reporting on it, I'm not saying to any committee, you can't bring it into your report. But the relevant place to deal with it in detail would be the report on the MTBPS, to say how is this going to affect government, functioning of government, and the outer years, because in this simply at this point in time, or in fact, for the whole medium-term expenditure framework, not just for this financial year, is 30.2 billion short. So it is a policy matter in that regard. So I'm going to leave it at that, Chair, because I fear I'm going to repeat myself. I feel, after having considered the brief and looking through it from various angles, that this matter can be dealt with in the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. I mean, that's what I do in my opinion. I say, what can go into a Division of Revenue Amendment Bill? What can go to an Adjustments Appropriation Bill? What can go into an Adjustments Budget? This can go in there, but it didn't go in there. So, in other words, it didn't impose an obligation or an unfunded mandate. But it needs to be sorted out. However that's going to work, the details will probably still come out, Chair. So let me leave it at that point, and I'll take some questions if there are any. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Jenkins. Honourable members, I'll take you again back to page 25 of the MDBBS document. The Department of Public Service and Administration will assist departments facing increased wage cost pressures. This matter was raised by a province. It was raised in our briefing. So in terms of procedures, it must be captured in our report. The way forward is to call the Department of Public Service and Administration. In terms of what has been said on page 25, to come and account how they will assist departments at national and provincial level. Honourable members, that is the negotiating mandates. I put the mandates to the committee, because we have to take a decision on it that we adopt it. Can I get a mover for adoption? Honourable Motara moves to adoption. Can I get a seconder? Honourable Samandi seconds. Thank you. Then the negotiating mandates has been duly adopted. Honourable members, then we go to our minutes. Here is a whole set of minutes. Treasury, we're going to release you now. We're going into our housekeeping matters. We will then see you next Tuesday, the 20th of November, in Gauteng, and I believe it's 12 o'clock. Am I correct? 12 o'clock. The venue will be communicated to us where we will meet to deal with the final mandates and then the report of the Committee on the Division of Revenue Amendment. Thank you. You are released. We're not going to keep you longer. Honourable members, 10th of October, minutes of the 10th of October, presentation by the FFC on its submission on the 2019-2020 Division of Revenue Bill. I put to you page 1. Who were present? Page 2. Who were present? Introduction, etc. Page 3. Page 4. Where is it? Honourable Termaat, are you leaving?
Yes, sir.
No, you can't. Otherwise, we can't adopt the minutes. Well, if you leave, we can't adopt the minutes. Then we're not going to correct. At this moment, you're still an official member of this committee. Yes. No, thank you very much. Honourable members, I put to you the minutes of the 10th of October. Can I get a mover for adoption? Honourable Samandi moves for adoption. Thank you. Can I get a seconder?
Yes, sir.
Yes, you were present. Thank you, members. That takes us to the minutes of order. Order of the 23rd of October, a pre-MTBBS briefing by the PBO prior to the MTBBS, page 1. Page 2, the list of all the people that were present. Page 3, the presentation and issues raised by members. Page 4, I put the minutes of 23rd of October to the members, to the committee. Can I get a mover for adoption?
Well, seeing as Honourable Motara and Honourable
Honourable Isaac moves for adoption, and Honourable de Blanche seconds the proposal. It takes us to the 25th of October, members, ministerial briefing on the 2018 medium-term budget policy statement, page 1, page 2, a whole delegation, including our colleagues from the provincial legislators, chairs of finance, page 3, page 4, the presentation, all the questions and issues that was raised by members, page 4 and 5, and page 6. I put the minutes of the 25th of October to members. Honorable Zamandi proposes adoption, and Honorable de Blanche seconds. Thank you, members. That takes us to the 30th of October. Briefing by the FFC and the PBO on the MTBBS, 30 October 2018, page 1. Page 2. Page 3 is the presentations and issues raised by honourable members. Yeah. Page 4. Page 5. And page 6. I put the minutes of 30 October 2018 to the committee. Can I get a move for adoption? Well, the Blanche moves for adoption. Can I get a seconder? Thank you, Honorable Isaac. That takes us to the 8th of November, briefing by the National Treasury on the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill 2018, page 1. Page 2. Our colleagues, again from the provincial legislators, were present, the chairs of finance. Page 3. This is raised by members, page 4 and page 5. I put the minutes of the 8th of November 2018 to the committee. Move for adoption. Honorable Matara moves for adoption. And seconded by? Thank you, Honorable Isaac. You seconds. Honorable members, the last set is the 9th of November 2018. Briefing by Salga, page 1, page 2, page 3 is the issues raised and the reply we get, you received that today, that will be captured in today's minutes, page 4, and page 5. I put the minutes of the 9th of November 2018 to the committee to move for adoption. Honorable Esser, as a member of this committee, moves for adoption, and Honorable de Blanche, as a member of this committee, moves seconds. Honorable members, thank you for adopting the minutes. Now, next week. Next week, appropriations will meet on the 20th, as I indicated, 20th November, the morning, 12 o'clock. And we will be informed at which venue. And the afternoon at 17 hours, there will be a plenary where the committee report will be tabled in plenary. On the 21st and the 23rd, the committee will meet in Cape Town, jointly with the Standing Committee on Appropriations, dealing with the Adjustment Appropriation Bill 2018. So that is the way forward for next week. Mrs. Zondi is dealing with the travel arrangements of members. So if there's any hiccups with your travel arrangements, you can just contact Mrs. Zondi. She's actually moving today to Gauteng to start the preparations for Monday. So when we arrive there, that whole team has done all the hard work. I recognize Honorable Isaac.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. The discussion that we're having regarding next week's planning, obviously it has somewhat of an effect on us as the committee, because we have to be back here on Tuesday night to be back here for Wednesday morning's meeting. And then Thursday is the plenary that takes place with the culmination of taking Parliament to the people in Johannesburg, am I correct? Now, what happens in a scenario, I'm speaking for myself here, where I've been asked to participate in the debate in Gauteng on Thursday. So I either have to be back here on Wednesday night, on Tuesday night to be part of the meeting on Wednesday, and then go back to Gauteng on Wednesday night to be part of the plenary on Thursday, which I'm happy to do because I'm committed to the process. But then it makes it very difficult then having to fly back on Thursday evening back to Cape Town to attend Friday morning's meeting and then go back to Nelspruit on Friday afternoon. I mean, it's ridiculous sitting 5 days in the plane every day. So I just wanted to, I think I will put in an apology with due respect, Chairperson, for next Friday's meeting, but be here on Wednesday and go back for the plenary on Thursday. But I trust that it would be understandable that if I didn't return on Thursday evening, that, you know, it would be acceptable to the committee because it's really taxing on the body. Thank you, Chairperson.
Your remark is noted. Honorable Motara, in a previous meeting, addressed this matter of our engagement on the Adjustment Appropriation Bill in Parliament. So that is covered. But we noted your input. Honorable Motara?
Yes, Chair, I think the Honorable Isaac can just submit an apology for Friday's meeting. It's not an issue. What he's saying is correct. To be able to travel up and down every day is ridiculous. So he can just submit an apology for Friday here. Yeah.
Thank you, honorable members. That covers the program of next week. We've come to the end of the business of this meeting. Yes, sir. Anything else?
Thank you, Chairperson. Before you adjourn the meeting, we just need guidance from the committee. We have prepared already a draft report that probably we may call it a first draft report. So we are ready to circulate it, but I was thinking that is it fair to share hard copies with members when members are going to travel, or maybe it's better to email it to members so that members can engage with the report. So that's what I'm inquiring, Mr. President. The Division of Revenue Amendment Bill draft report, yes. Of course, it's going to go up to indicating the issue of final mandate, even though we have not received and considered them yet. So if let's say, for example, Province X is going to be unable to submit a final mandate before we adopt the report, we'll amend and delete it on Tuesday. But if then we receive all final mandates on time, then it will be perfect. If there are any amendments that members will propose on the report, hence we want to give members an opportunity to have the report over the weekend and just go through it and probably give us feedback on Monday. I was even like saying to Estelle, if it's possible, probably since we are traveling on Monday, on Monday evening, we have like an informal session just to go through the report, so that when we meet as a committee officially on Tuesday, then it will be a question of just quickly adopting the report if we do have time on Monday evening, maybe even if it's say an hour to go through the report. So key issue now is a directive from the committee whether we must distribute hard copies or we must email the report. Otherwise, that's where we are in terms of the draft report. Thank you, sir.
I put it to the committee. I'm not going to repeat everything. Over here, sir.
Chairperson, I think in the interest of practicality, perhaps if it's emailed to all of us and we find the time to engage with it over the weekend, great. But I also commend the suggestion that on Monday evening at like 6 o'clock or so, for 5 to 5 o'clock, we meet just for 45 minutes, clean it up so that on Tuesday we don't have to have long deliberations about it. Otherwise, it means having to carry all this information with, let's be honest, most of us might not even engage with it. It's just a waste of time and effort. Email it for those that are interested. And maybe with your permission, and if it suits the other committee members, we meet for 45 minutes on Monday evening. That's my suggestion.
Honourable Blanche.
Chairperson, now, if you are done with this issue, I just want to say something, please.
Any other member on the draft report, Honourable Motara?
Yes, Chair, I think I second Honourable Essac's proposal. Let's do it that way.
It's fine. I've got a logistical challenge about my flight to Gauteng from the Northern Cape. So you will have to have a late night meeting. It's out of my control. It will be emailed to us. Thank you. Honorable de Blanche.
Chairperson, thank you. I just want to, you made mention of the fact that I'm going to move to other committees now. And I just want to say at this, in this meeting that I want to thank this committee for, both committees for being able to work with everybody here. I certainly enjoyed it. And I'm going to miss you guys. And I requested, and I think that is going to be allowed, but I haven't seen the ACT yet. I have requested to remain as an alternative member of this committee, because I can assure you, come the budget and the lock-up session and stuff, if I can fit it in, I'll be there. And now and again, I'll come around if I may. But thank you very much. I just think, it's necessary for me to say a thank you.
Honourable de Blanche, no, thank you. We appreciate the input you made and the value you added to the committee. I've got a letter here dated the 15th of November 2018 from the Chief Whip, Honourable S.J. Muhai, to the Honourable Chair of the NCP, Honourable Modise, indicated that you will be the alternate. Yes. That you will be the alternate, yes. So, there it is. Do you want this? Do you have it? Honourable members, thank you. That concludes the business of the day. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, remember that.